You're listening to Bison Report Radio.
It's going to be interesting to see how Richmond wants to play this in terms of what he does. He does want to go out and try to get some immediate help there.
The man, the myth, the legend, Greg Menard, rushing the passer from his right end position as a senior, and I think a legitimate National Defensive Player of the Year candidate.
You're listening to Bison Report Radio from Scout.com. Here's your hosts, Ryan Burns and Ross Uglum.
And welcome back to another edition of the BisonReport.com radio podcast, this being your preview and breakdown edition as we will look back at the Mississippi Valley State victory 72-7 at home over Mississippi Valley State. We will also preview the Eastern Washington game this weekend. We'll get Ross's elite meteorology mind in terms of will smoke play a factor. We will also go over the new NDSU basketball commitment, the first one for the 2018 class. But joining me, as always, is my co-host, Ross Uglum. Ross, what are you more excited for, the return of NFL football here this weekend or this Bison game on Saturday?
I'd be lying if I wasn't saying that it was pro ball. I'm very excited about the game on Saturday, no question, but I love football at its highest level. Most people would prefer college ball, and I'm just not one of them. I love the NFL. As most of you know by this point, I love watching and covering the Green Bay Packers, and I'm excited for their game against Seattle, because that's kind of the other part of it, too, is that's been a bit of a rivalry of late, the thing with Seattle. So it's a big day on Sunday.
It's a tough life to cover such an amazing football team on the collegiate side of things and in the NFC North. As me being a Vikings fan, we are perennially somewhere between 6 and 10, 10 and 6. We forever seem to be looking up at those Green Bay Packers. But let's get into the news and notes part of the podcast here, Ross. I know that there's a lot of injuries, and unfortunately one, if not two big ones, including one of a debut of an offensive lineman who was about as dominant as I've seen. And let's start there with Dylan Raddins. I know that Kleiman, from reading your quotes from the press conference, talked about how Dylan had 15 plays, and not only did he play on all 15, he dominated in all those 15, and the starting left tackle is now out for the season. How depressed are you, and how was your immediate reaction when you heard the news?
Well, I mean, I don't think there's any bones about it. People understand that I'm still a fan of North Dakota State. As a member of the media, I'm supposed to be objective, but you get to know these guys, and I've interviewed Dylan on more than one occasion now, and he was just so special. I mean, you go back and watch some of the vines that I posted on Twitter and then in the film review piece, and he's as talented, and this is pretty hyperbolic, probably because of just the number of NDSU guys that have made it to pro ball, but he's as talented as a young offensive lineman as I've seen in this program. I mean, Mississippi Valley State is not good, but the level of dominance that he was able to show as a 19-year-old kid, pancaking people, blocking two guys at once, that's a thing that actually happened on a touchdown play.
He
scraped the mic into the Will, and Lance Dunn walked in. It was unbelievable, and they're going to lose him for the season. And because he redshirted, he will likely only really play 3 years at North Dakota State, and as far as I'm concerned, probably go to the NFL. Really an unbelievable talent, and it sucks. Even if I wasn't an NDSU fan, it would have been fun just as a football guy to cover a player of that caliber, and I don't get to do it until at least 2018 now.
Well, you look at, again, we've been talking about Dylan. We've been talking to Dylan for, you know, a year, year and a half now. And folks will remember him getting the late Missouri offer, I believe the morning of signing day or the day before signing day, and ultimately still deciding to come to North Dakota State. There was never a Big Ten offer on the table. And I look at like a place like the University of Minnesota and how they've had an awful offensive line in terms of development since, I think, 2006 was the last time. And then you see an in-state kid go to NDSU and then put on this kind of performance. It's just, it's tough to see that Dylan's going to be out because, again, as Ross said, we're a lot higher on Dylan than maybe some others. But, I mean, you talked about it, Ross. I mean, he could have the kind of ceiling that could surpass like a Joe Haig. And I know that we were talking about that in the pre-production meeting. I mean, why do you think specifically he could have an even higher ceiling than some of the other guys, some of the other offensive linemen that NDSU has put into the league?
Well, he's so much more fluid athletic. Not so much more, but he's more fluid athletically. He moves like a tight end, and he blocks like an offensive tackle. And that's a special thing, and it's an important thing. And especially for pro prospects, you know, I don't want to, you know, disparage like the Jack Plankers, the Landon Lecklers of the world. This guy's on another stratosphere, and he moves so well for being that big, and then you watch him just bury another 280-pound human being, and man, he's got a chance. Like I said, he's got a chance, and you just hope that it was a clean tear, and that when he does come back, that he is the same level athlete that he was before he left, because that's a high-level athlete.
Another NDSU football player out for the season was actually their leading carrier on Saturday. You look at Demarius Purifoy, 18 carries for 85 yards and a score, and now he's going to be out for the season as well. How did Coach Kleiman sound when he talked about it at the press conference, and what are your initial thoughts about NDSU losing someone who had 18 carries on Saturday?
Well, he definitely sort of talked about the injuries as a group, because there were three, but just really had to have that next man up mentality and had to address it as though it was not some big blow to this campaign that they're about to start the 2017 season, and that they were going to be fine. But you could tell, I mean, he was kind of annoyed. It's tough too for Demarius, because frankly, I would anticipate a transfer out of the running back room at the conclusion of this season, and I would not be surprised if it were Purifoy. They're going to add Seth Wilson. Cofield was already a part of things. He just wasn't completely healthy that day, and you're not going to graduate any tailbacks this year. So it would not surprise me at all if Purifoy's NDSU career ended on Saturday, just from numbers purely, and might want to potentially look at going somewhere else where he can play a little bit more. But he was RB4 behind, of course, Dunn, Anderson, and Brooks. And I think with the addition of Wilson and the existence of Cofield, it's just going to be tough for him to come back from a knee injury and be a major contributor at North Dakota State at this time.
Someone who was a major contributor on special teams last year, and we have to talk about another injury. And this is the worst part about a 72-7 victory, is you look at the injury report, your starting left tackle's gone. Someone who was your leading carry guy on Saturday is out for the season now. And now we have to talk about Jackson Brown, who is going to be out for at least a month, maybe a month and a half, if not more. What did Coach Kleiman have to say about that? And again, what are your thoughts?
Well, I kind of knew he wasn't going to be out for the season just watching the replay because of where they put the ice. The ice was, for lack of a better term, in his knee pit. It was behind him. He tore or had an issue with the PCL, the posterior cruciate ligament, and those are generally a non-surgery, non-season-ending deal. But he's 4 weeks at best, 6-7 weeks at worst, and he's a great player, and he is a key depth position on defense. I believe he's the top backup for Trey Dempsey. But at the same time, if he's not their finest special teams player, he's right up there. And it's going to put more pressure on guys like Chris Board and guys like Nick DeLuca to have to play special teams units that may not have been a part of if Brown was completely healthy. And that's unfortunate, because that is a third of the game that is very important, and a third of the game that NDSU has been exceptional at for a while. I mean, you talk about great punters like Ben LeCompte. You talk about great, great cover guys and good special teams aces like Brian Shepard in the past. They're going to miss Jackson Brown for this little run here, but hopefully he'll be back for the meat of the Valley schedule.
All right, so before we really get into the 72-7 breakdown, let's talk a little bit about NDSU basketball. The season's getting closer and closer, and over the weekend, NDSU hosted their first official visitor, I believe, of the season, and they ended up getting a commitment from him. So 6'5", 6'6", 2/3, Jackson Notek from River Falls, Wisconsin, someone who also had offers from American University in the Division I level, and then two Division II offers from Concordia, I believe St. Paul, and then Minnesota State Moorhead. He's someone that really picked up interest of late, someone that NDSU offered, I believe, in the – I think it was early August. And you look at the AAU tape that was put out by his AAU team, the Wisconsin Playmakers. Again, someone who shot, I believe, 40-plus percent from three last year at River Falls. Someone that is very not afraid to climb the ladder and put it down on anybody who's standing underneath the basket. I think I counted in only like a 120-second highlight tape. He put it down on four different kids, put it right down their head. So when you look at Jackson, Ross, how do you think he's going to fit into this rotation as we look at this NDSU basketball roster? Again, 6'6", 2/3. He can really shoot it, and he's not afraid to drive it as well.
Well, I think you just have to look at it from an entire philosophy standpoint. I wrote a couple years ago about positionless basketball, and Dave kind of asked for clarification on what I meant, and now it's funny because he's giving interviews and talking about positionless basketball, and that's what they're playing right now. You listen to like Brad Stevens talk about basketball, and he goes, "We have ball handlers, wings, and bigs. The 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 are sort of archaic. You see it with the Golden State Warriors. You see it with a lot of the top teams. They're playing small ball is what it is, you know, from a traditional sense, but it's also just the evolution of the game. You can see it in the two junior college transfers that North Dakota State took this year. Everybody's going to be long, but they're going to be able to move. They're going to be able to play the ball. And I think from now on until Coach Richmond is either retired or no longer the coach of North Dakota State University, you're going to mostly see lineups of three wings, one ball handler, and one big. And they did that last year, even though, you know, Dexter Werner was probably 6'4.5", 6'5". He was the big, and they're going to continue to probably use one big lineups for a very long time. And I have to say I completely agree with it. It's the way that modern basketball is going. And I think Notek is just another example. You even look at the guys that they're targeting after Notek, and it's mostly ball handlers and wings. They took in two bigs in Rocky Cruiser, the Rocky can shoot it, and Jordan Meininger this last season, and they might, you know, kind of be the bigs for these next couple classes and maybe reevaluate bigs for the 2019 recruiting class. So it just is a example of what they're going to do differently at North Dakota State than has maybe been done in the past. And he's been a couple of years ahead on this, using the 4-around-1 or the 1-3-1 offensive lineup and being able to switch a ton of stuff on defense and remain top one or top two in the league on that side of the ball.
All right, let's get into this Mississippi Valley State breakdown a little bit more in depth. We've already talked about losing the left tackle, but we need to talk about this offensive line just in general. You look at what NDSU was able to do rushing the ball. It's pretty spectacular when you look at the numbers. 498 rushing yards on 53 attempts. That's 9.4 yards per carry. That's absurd on 50-plus carries. So that offensive line really just overwhelmed that undersized Mississippi Valley State defensive front seven.
No question about it. They're not a very good team. I mean, we'll talk about that in a second, but that's just flat out the deal. With that said, this is something that Kleiman was ready for. They were ready to play 7 or 8 guys on the offensive line. And just because they lost Radins, all that really is going to happen is it'll move to 6 or 7. Now, you and I felt that Radins should be a player that probably plays every play.
Yes.
Should have just been the starting left tackle. But the reality was Bryce Messner and Luke Bacon are going to be a part of that. And they were going to anyway, and they were going to play Colin Connor at left tackle and at left guard because he has that body type. And now, yeah, Connor's probably going to play more left tackle again. But it's going to be a good group. And it's going to be a good group without Radins, it was going to be a good group with him. And getting these young guys like Bacon, Schoenig, Little Volson, all a bunch of reps this season is just going to make that line stronger next year when Radins returns.
Again, a 72-7 victory you even look after the first quarter, Ross, and you were there 30-0 after the first. At halftime, we're sitting at 44-7. We're 65-7 heading into the fourth quarter. Mississippi Valley State isn't very good, but this looks like an NDSU team that should be competing deep into the FCS playoffs.
Yeah, they looked like exactly what we thought they'd look like. There were a few concerns. Like, I wasn't super excited about the pass rush from the edges. I thought that the pass rush came from where you would think it would come, and that's right up the middle and from the blitzers, because at this point, the blitzers and the interior rushers are the more proven players, and they need to get more from the Tuska brothers. They need to get more from Stanley Jones, and they probably need to get a little bit from Logan McCormick if he's going to be the one that is it's obvious. I mean, it's over. He is the one that's going to be playing out of that trio from this recruiting class. So it'll be interesting to see, and we'll talk about it in the EWU. That was my one big concern. Everything else was, you know, pretty well scouted. I kind of told a couple people that I thought this would be about a 70-point game, and they won by 65.
And when you look at how, or at least poorly, Mississippi Valley State moved the ball, you look at what they were able to do in the passing game. They were 7 for 22. That is, I believe, around 30%, 89 passing yards and an interception. That secondary has a lot of competition in it. And maybe the guy that I know we talked about him last week, Ross, but James Hendricks, from just going through your Upon Film review on the Bison Report, which, again, folks, if you want to become a smarter Bison football fan, Ross elevates you to that level by just reading his five-minute piece. But James Hendricks might be a lot better than we thought he was going to be.
He was everywhere, man. And, I mean, they took the opportunity to play him a ton of snaps, because really his only live, and I'm using quotation marks with some bad radio here, but his live look was pretty much NDSU spring game. That's it. And he had an interception in that game, but he got to play a ton on Saturday against Mississippi Valley State, and he was impressive, especially for a former QB. But I talk about it all the time. Give me former QBs everywhere. I want former QBs playing receiver. I want former QBs playing safety.
So true.
NDSU has a history of actually guys like Esley Thornton and Carlton Littlejohn being very good outside linebackers, former quarterbacks. Shoot, Jabril Cox is a former quarterback. Just if you're smart enough to QB, if you're smart enough to play QB, you're smart enough to play for my football team. And NDSU has really been lucky in the sense of they are able to pull a lot of former QBs. They're usually the best athlete or
Yes, exactly what I was going to say. If you're looking at like a Trey Lance of sorts, Trey Lance has the ability to play quarterback, receiver, or safety at the collegiate level. When you look at high school kids, usually the best athlete on the field plays quarterback because he has to. So it should be no surprise, as Ross notes, that James has been able to make the transition because he is more than athletic enough to move to safety there.
Well, right, and if you're the best athlete on the team and you're not at QB, A, you can't throw, or B, you're not smart enough to play it. I mean, those kids sometimes end up at running back or receiver, but if you've got a good head on your shoulders, your head coach is probably going to use you at QB, and that's what they did with Hendricks, and even he was in this program as a quarterback. So I was just really impressed. He's fast. I mean, he really is fast.
And he's not afraid to be physical, which, again, if you're a quarterback moving to the secondary, that may be, you know, one of the things you're watching for early on is, again, quarterback, you're basically told don't take a lot of contact, and now you transition to safety. He's not afraid to come downhill and get you very quickly.
Right, exactly. You go from wearing a jersey in practice that literally, you know, don't touch me to lowering the boom, and I was really impressed. I'll be interested to see how much of that was a dress rehearsal or not. If he really is that fifth defensive back, I mean, Eastern Washington isn't what they were. We'll talk about that coming up. But it's still a squad that throws the ball a ton, and the Bison will be in sub a lot. There's just no real way around it.
Speaking of the secondary, maybe a little bit of a surprise is that there was a true freshman redshirt burn on Saturday. That was Josh Hayes, someone from Florida, someone the NDSU got in January. Were you surprised to see Mr. Hayes his redshirt come off in the first game of the season?
I mean, I had to be surprised because we didn't talk about it. In fact, we didn't talk about the McCormick over Wagey thing really either until game day. I was able to speak with
Let's talk about that after this Hayes.
Sure. Right. And so, I mean, both the redshirts that got pulled were actually non-announced. I mean, we didn't know what was going on. Plus, as you and I understood it, they were taking Hayes as a safety. And all of a sudden, I looked down and I'm like, I thought Dom Davis, A, was hurt, and B, switched to number two. So what the hell is 35 doing at right corner? And there he was.
So I'm surprised. There's Josh Hayes.
Right, exactly. Exactly.
So, again, let's get into this Logan McCormick over Spencer Wagey. Again, that would have been the steam throughout fall camp was, well, Spencer's probably going to have to play here early on. Maybe he's a Big Ten kind of kid. And again, I believe he's from Watertown, South Dakota. And then we get to game day. Oh, by the way, Spencer's probably going to redshirt. Logan McCormick's going to get the first crack. What did you think of his first performance and just the overall decision?
I thought he was fine. I wasn't, like I said, I wasn't that impressed with the edge rush. They didn't get home a ton. They were playing some bad tackles, and they should have dominated, and they really didn't. And this was against a team that had to throw the ball because they were down by a million. So, we'll see.
And you mentioned that edge rush. We might as well just get into it right now. I believe on the day, NDSU had, I believe, four sacks, Ross? I believe that's right.
Right.
So, again,
One was Tangways, and one was Mercadels, and one was DeLucas. I mean, these were coming from the interior guys and the blitzers.
Right. And so you look at just the amount of pressure you'd want your front four to really generate against an inferior opponent, which Mississippi Valley State was. We knew that it was going to take a downturn with no Greg Menard, but what are your expectations for this, at least front four, and what do you think defensive coordinator is going to have to do now that, again, he knows we struggled to really kind of get any kind of edge rush against Mississippi Valley State. That's going to have to change against Eastern Washington.
It absolutely has to. Without question, they cannot be dropping five. I mean, they can't have to bring extra rushers on every passing play. It's not the way the defense is designed. And if you want to wake up that EWU offense after their performance against Texas Tech, blitzing them on every down is a good way to do it.
And we've talked about it, 72-7, Mississippi Valley State is awful. I mean, where would you put them in the ranks of some of the non-conference teams that have come to the Fargo Dome over the years?
I think they're the worst team, and I'm not trying to be mean or disrespectful, but they're just not where they should be as a program right now. I really did think that they were among the weaker squads to come to Fargo during NDSU's Division I period. That was the largest margin of victory since an 80-0 win over Morehead State, but that was Division II NDSU over Division II Morehead State. So from a Division I against Division I perspective, this was easily the biggest blowout. And once I got to field level on Saturday and just looked over at warmups, I realized that they weren't big enough. It was the same thing that I saw when NDSU played the University of San Diego in the first round of the FCS playoffs. University of San Diego just wasn't big enough, and this was obviously, you know, far above and beyond what happened to the University of San Diego. So I do think that this was probably the weakest squad, but sometimes to open up the season, you have to schedule a cupcake. You got to get people in the doors. You want that opening game sellout, and even if it's a 72-7 game, you got to do it. That's, you know, really good NCAA programs have been scheduling cupcakes in early weeks for 100 years. It's just a thing that happens. And with that, we're going to take a break here to get a word from our sponsor.
Other insurance companies try to cover the entire country. We think there's plenty of ground to cover right here. Homes, autos, farms, and ranches. Nodak Insurance Company is focused on serving the people in the great state of North Dakota with agents who care and provide the answers you need to your doorstep. Hi, I'm Ross Uglum, your agent in Fargo. Call me today at 701-532-0891 and get the protection you need. Nodak Insurance, agents with answers.
All right, let's get into this Eastern Washington preview. We have to start with, obviously, and we talked about NDSU's first game of the season. What happened for the Eastern Washington Eagles? Well, they got slapped across the face when they headed down to Texas Tech over the weekend, a 56-10 loss for Eastern Washington. Again, I was expecting this game to be a little bit closer considering the caliber that I consider Eastern Washington to be, but Texas Tech really didn't have any problem moving the ball, specifically through the air, where they threw the ball for a extremely efficient 449 yards on 35 attempts and only 4 incomplete passes. So is there really much of anything that you're drawing from the opening week game for Eastern Washington, Ross?
I mean, it confirms a lot of things that I thought, where maybe this QB is not everything that he was made up to be. I thought it was pretty evident on film last year that he was an okay player, but that all three of his receiver weapons were, you know, at least fringe NFL quality. Cooper Kupp, of course, being third.
I think all three got at least, they were at least in the preseason. I know Cooper Kupp, 69th pick overall, but yes.
Yeah, so that kind of bore itself out, really. Their defense has never been good. They have always had to outscore people, but this was a situation where they were not able to outscore people.
Yes. The offense, and maybe that's the thing I'll take away most from Eastern Washington's first game. Big 12 defenses are not good.
No.
So them being only, especially Texas Tech, I think perennially over the years, they've been one of the worst in terms of points per game against them. And Guber was only able to put up, I believe, well, obviously just only 10 points. So
the yards per attempt were really bad, too.
Yes. And so, I mean, that leads into, is Gabe, I mean, is he any good? I mean, you look at what he did last year in the Fargo Dome and that overtime victory for the Bison. He puts up 450 yards passing, 49 on the ground, so almost 500 yards of total offense just himself. So is it Gabe's actually really good, or is it just that he had three borderline, or you know, one at least NFL receiver, two other borderline in an FCS conference?
I mean, the evidence in a very small sample size currently points to Guber maybe not being that good. And I mean, we'll see, but there's something to be said to throwing to open guys. And honestly, even something to be said about the confidence that knowing these guys are going to be open and really knowing they're going to win contested catches too gives a young QB. So I'm not trying to say that he's not a good player, but at the same time, he just doesn't have it with this group.
Yes, there's a large difference between going from Cooper Kupp and two other fringe NFL receivers to you don't have any of those kind of quality of caliber receivers to replace them. And from talking with Michael Brock of the Easterner, he's an Eastern Washington beat writer. That was one of the things he cited in our Know Your Enemy piece on the Bison Report was, when you go from three NFL receivers to a lot of guys trying to break themselves in, there were far too many drop balls. You know, is it Gabe? Is it the receivers? You know, honestly, it's probably a little bit of a combination of both. So when you look at NDSU trying to frazzle Guber, I mean, you're going to have to rush the passer. You look at what Texas Tech was able to do. They only had one sack on the day. So Eastern Washington gets to go back home to the red turf, and NDSU comes in. They're going to have to find a way to generate pressure. How are they going to do that, Ross?
I mean, they're going to try, I think, with four. That's going to be their initial plan. I believe that the coaching staff has a very high opinion of these unproven pass rushers, and who am I to disagree? And they very well could be right. I don't think I've said or believe that they aren't good. But if it doesn't work, and it didn't really work last year, if it doesn't work to bring four, I don't know what you end up doing because of how good DeLuca is as a pass coverage guy. Do you really want him blitzing and rushing the passer all the time? If I was just completely in charge of the defensive playbook, I would probably find a way to get Jabril Cox on the field as much as possible and have him as sort of a spy / Guberu terrorizer guy. Don't ever get out of position, But I would have Jabril Cox in Gubru's face as much as possible just because of his flexibility as an athlete and his speed. I think you could really shut down a lot of the stuff that Gubru was able to do outside of the pocket last season. And if his receivers are not going to make plays against what is now a very veteran NDSU secondary, I think that it's certainly not out of the question to suggest North Dakota State's defense being on par with Texas Tech's.
I would hope so. I think you could probably make the argument for it. So when we look at NDSU on the offensive side of the ball, them going to be on the road, on the red turf, you're going to think, well, they're probably going to just want to play ball control. Well, they tried to kind of do that last year, and then it ended up a 50-44 game, and there were 36 points specifically scored in the fourth quarter. So you look at NDSU wanting to be able to run the ball, control the clock. They had success against Eastern Washington last year doing that, 6 yards a carry on 47 carries. What do you think is probably going to be the offensive plan of attack for the Bison on the road?
I think it will be ball control. I think they have a lot of confidence in Easton Stick, but that can also work as a runner. And I think they want to let him control the game. And what I really think after, you know, understanding what went on in Lubbock is this NDSU staff has to think they are keeping Eastern Washington under 20. And so the goal then just becomes score 21. I mean, that's how the math works out. I really think they can score three or four times. You know, they might score five or six, but to just slow the game down, trust the defense, trust Grimsley, trust Dempsey, trust DeLuca to manage what's going on with EWU, I really don't see any reason that they can't really shut them down defensively. And then at that point, why are you trying to throw the ball all over the yard? Certainly, they might want to get Stick going early. They might want to establish a little bit more of a passing game than they had last season purely. But at the same time, why not do that against Robert Morris, who I think would be more of like the 28-point victory than the 70-point victory? It might offer you a little bit of a better live look at your passing game.
My next question for you here is, again, you probably would know the stats better than I would off the top of my head, or both of our heads, but NDSU has been historically good at home, but they've also been extremely dominant on the road. Why do you think they've had so much success, especially going on the road and being able to be as successful as they've been?
Yeah, they're actually better as a road team, and that's why I think the people that are picking Eastern Washington, this is almost laughable. And so, frankly, I think are the people picking NDSU to lose two games this year. I just don't see it. All their difficult games are on the road where they pretty much win every time they strap up. I've asked Kleiman about it. We've talked about it a little bit. And realistically, it's just an attitude thing. They're out of Fargo. They're away from all distractions, good and bad. And I mean that as, you know, like family, trying to get people tickets. We all love our families. But when they're not around and you're just able to focus on football, I mean, you're laser sharp. There's one goal when NDSU goes on a road trip. And way more than 9 times out of 10, they get the victory. And you look at what the, you know, average winning percentage is of a Division I college football program on the road. What NDSU does is really mind-blowing. And I think you'll see, certainly, I know a bunch of people, and I would imagine there are plenty more that I don't know about that are going to be making that trip. And it's kind of a yearly thing for a Bison fan to make some sort of pilgrimage. And without an FBS game this year, that has really ended up being this game in Cheney. So I wouldn't be surprised to see maybe 2,000 to 2,500 Bison fans at this thing. And that's going to be a vocal group. It always is. It's going to be a nice boost for the squad when they're out there. And I really do think that this game is more in NDSU's favor than I think people even realize.
So let's get to the Eastern Washington beat guy prediction before we get into one of our own. And that's going to be his rationale for his 42-35 victory for Eastern Washington. He thinks Goober is going to be able to pass and do whatever he wanted or wants against this NDSU defense. NDSU, and we'll get into it, is a 9.5-point favorite, which means they're about 12.5 in terms of actual points. How ludicrous do you think that beat prediction is?
Well, just the like the final score, I don't understand. What if you're going to try and run the ball this season, which you can't do against NDSU, and frankly, the Menard injury probably helped that. I love Greg, but he's not a elite run defender, and certainly aren't going to lose anything going from Greg to Stanley Jones in the run game. And you think that by doing that, you're going to score 35, 36 more points on NDSU than you did against Texas Tech, when historically there's been basically no comparison. North Dakota State has had a more effective defense than Texas Tech forever. And I understand that they're FCS and FBS. I'm talking about like on a neutral field. NDSU has better players. They have a better scheme. They have a better defense than Texas Tech. I just don't get it. I don't understand the logic behind a 35-point swing, especially if you're going to try to throw the ball. This is a good NDSU secondary, and they might have just found James Hendricks. I mean, I don't know. I don't understand it. I don't understand the logic. I'm all, you know, fine. You can expect the home team to win. You're disagreeing with Vegas by about 12.5 points, which is usually not very bright. And we'll see how it goes. I mean, I probably sound like a homer, but so did that prediction.
So let's get into the prediction part of the podcast here before we wrap things up for today. So as I mentioned, as we are recording this, NDSU is a 9.5-point favorite. I believe the over-under is somewhere around 52. If I was a betting man, which both Ross and I are, I would say this game is probably going to be somewhere around 34-17, 34-21, somewhere probably around there. I think that NDSU is going to have no issue running the ball. I think that Easton Stick is going to be able to find Erzendowski through the air quite a bit as well. And I think that no matter what the kind of conditions are out there in terms of the air quality, which is expected to be cleared up, I believe that the time that this game kicks off, I'll put it at 34-21, Ross. What say you?
28-17.
Is it close first half, pulling away in the second half, and who do you think could potentially be the MVP of this offense?
I think it's just going to be a game-long grind in which you see Easton Stick be the MVP. I think he's going to control the game on the ground. I would guess that there will be pretty option-heavy, not the pitch option, obviously, the read option, and that between rushing yards and passing yards, he'll be the straw that stirs the drink, and they'll use Brooks, and they'll use Dunn, and they'll use Anderson, and they'll move the ball just by mashing on this, you know, generally smaller and, frankly, generally weaker Big Sky defense.
Sounds good to me. So that's going to wrap things up for today's edition of the BisonReport.com radio podcast. We will be back early next week to break down what is hopefully a Bison football victory over Eastern Washington. So if you want to head on over to the BisonReport.com to check out the latest content we have, again, previewing Eastern Washington with one of their local beat writers, Ross's piece in terms of Know Your Enemy. God damn it, Ross.
Jesus Christ. Fuck this stuff up.
If you want to head on over to the Bison Report to check out all the latest and greatest content that we have over there, we've been referencing most of the pieces that we've been talking about here on the podcast today on there. So Ross is Upon Film Review. If you want to become a smarter Bison football fan, Ross makes you that way very, very quickly by just reading his piece. We preview Eastern Washington with one of their beat writers, and then Ross will have the Eastern Washington versus NDSU official preview out here probably within the next 24 hours. So if you can, support the Bison Report. Again, it's only $4.95 a month to support what we do, and we greatly appreciate it. If you want to also rate us and review us on iTunes to help other Bison fans find us on the iTunes platform or Stitcher, that would be greatly appreciated as well. So for Ross, for myself, we thank you guys for listening. We'll talk to you next week. Go Bison.